Boo on July 4th through the 7th for our live broadcast from the 32nd Annual Waterfront Blues Festival. We'll start the broadcast from the Waterfront Blues Festival on Thursday, July 4th at noon, and broadcast the fest every day from noon through 10 p.m. Again, that's the Waterfront Blues Festival, the largest celebration of blues, soul, funk, and rhythm and blues west of the Mississippi, July 4th through the 7th from noon to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a morning news and public affairs director, as well as an evening news and public affairs director to manage the news and public affairs programming. For these two full-time positions, we're looking for people with proven experience in audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork in a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. The deadline to apply for both of these positions is Monday, July 1st at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon ranks in the lower half of all states for child well-being.
Joy Harjo is the new National Poet Laureate.
And in the second half of this newscast, Micah Fletcher is Mike Crenshaw's live guest on News from the Boo. They'll be playing music from their new recording.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. The Portland City Council today directed Portland Parks and Recreation to update the Washington Park Transportation and Parking Management Agreement, which aims to improve access to the park and was first adopted in 2012. Here is KBOO's Jason Shermans with the story.
The Washington Park Transportation and Parking Management Agreement. The agreement is now due for an update, and so Heather McCary, the executive director of Explore Washington Park, gave a presentation to the Portland City Council to update them on the success of the program. Here now is McCary's presentation.
So as we all know, Washington Park is home to Portland's most iconic attractions, including the International Rose Test Garden, the Oregon Zoo, World Forestry Center, the Portland Japanese Garden, Hoyt Arboretum, and the Portland Children's Museum. And access to Washington Park has always been an issue. Washington Park used to be called City Park. And in 1903, when the Olmsted brothers came through Portland to do a plan for the parks of Portland, they said this of City Park: "Already, the capacity of City Park is taxed to its utmost upon holidays and pleasant Sundays in summer." And that was in 1903. So we fast forward 100 years, and that's to 2012, and that's when the directors of the park, as well as City Council and Metro Council, made the agreement to improve access to the park. And it really promised two things: that we would create a nonprofit to do traffic management for the park, as well as to create a pay-to-park system so those funds could be reinvested. One of our most visible programs is our free inter-park shuttle. The shuttle links the Washington Park MAX station to the rest of the venues in Washington Park. It comes every 15 minutes. You can track it in real time at ewpshuttle.org. They're fully ADA accessible, and we provide about 130,000 rides on that annually. The new agreement has stated that this should be an annual service rather than just a seasonal service, so it'll now run daily through October and then weekends only November through April. We wanted people to understand the park in a more holistic fashion so that they went to the Oregon Zoo, they knew that they were also in the same park as the International Rose Test Garden and how to get there. And so we developed a park map with all of our partners. We hired a local artist to do the map cover this year. We printed 80,000 of these maps and distribute them throughout the city of Portland.
McCary then goes on to talk about the transportation management plan, which is intending to increase public transportation use going to and from the park.
And all of our work up there is definitely having an impact. We do annual intercept surveys of over 1,000 people in the park each August. And through those surveys, we've been able to see a 23% decrease in the percent of people getting to the park using their personal vehicle use, 59% increase in transit use, over 250% increase in the percent of people using our free shuttle. So these are all great numbers that we're excited to share, and we're even more excited to share that in light of the 11% increase in park-wide attendance that we've seen in peak season since 2014. We also really want to be an incubator for new transportation initiatives for the whole city. With that in mind, we're working really aggressively to turn our inner park shuttle fleet into a fully electric fleet, potentially and hopefully by next summer. And then, of course, we're always looking at ways to use data to better inform our policies.
Well, thanks for the presentation. I am particularly impressed by the fact that although we've seen visitors increase by 11%, we've seen trips in single occupant vehicles or in cars decrease by 23%, transit increase by 59%, and shuttle increase by 279%. That's really extraordinary. Yeah. If only we could do that citywide.
Yes. Yeah.
It would be transformative.
Yes, it would be.
Free transit, that's how you do it.
Oh, I agree, Commissioner. Thank you.
And for once, this reporter also agrees with Commissioner Fritz. For KBOO News, this is Jason Shermans.
A bipartisan agreement to curb the NSA from spying on U.S. citizens was defeated yesterday because of 126 Democrats joining with 127 Republicans, while Oregon Representative Susan Bonamici, Kurt Schrader, and Peter DeFazio voted for the amendment, Earl Blumenauer and Greg Walden voted against. The amendment would have closed loopholes in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that have allowed the NSA to abuse warrantless surveillance capabilities. Evan Greer, Deputy Director of Fight for the Future, said sarcastically, quote, "It's good to know that House Democrats are resisting Trump by voting to ensure that he has limitless authority to conduct mass warrantless surveillance."
A newly released study has shown an increase in suicide rates among young people between the ages of 15 and 24. The study examined data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's underlying cause of death database. An increase was especially seen among 15 to 19-year-old men. Suicide rates in the U.S. peaked in 2017, the highest point since 2000. In 2017 alone, there were 6,241 suicides of young adults, with an overwhelming majority of them being male. The research study did not examine the factors behind increasing suicide rates. If you or anyone you know is struggling, contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or text the word HOME to 741-741. Para servicios en español, llama al número 1-888-628-9454. My ladies.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast at 5:30 for news from the Boo. Then at 6, it's the Laura Flanders Show. And at 6:30, Free Culture Radio with Doug McVeigh. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be mostly clear with a low of 53 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly cloudy with morning showers and a high of 69 degrees. Today in history, in 1968, 50,000 people marched in Washington, D.C. in support of the Poor People's Campaign. The quote of the day is from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who created the Poor People's Campaign in 1967, but was assassinated 2 months before the D.C. March. King said, quote, We know through painful experience that freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed.
Walk through the door, don't be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Joy Harjo, poet, musician, and member of the Muscogee Creek Nation, was named the U.S.'s first Native American Poet Laureate. She said, quote, "This kind of award honors the place of Native people in this country, the place of Native people's poetry," end quote. Harjo has not yet chosen a project to work on during her year as Poet Laureate, but said she wanted to highlight the intersectional nature of poetry with music and dance, as well as to speak to the present social and political divides. An American Sunrise, her 14th poetry collection, will be published in August.
In 1970, Southern resident orca whales in Pen Cove, Washington, were taken away from their families, separated, and put into aquariums. By tradition and treaty, the Lummi Nation is the rightful protector of the Salish Sea, where Pen Cove is located. Tave Fashe Drake has this story.
Lolita, also known as Tokitaya, living at the Miami Seaquarium, is the last remaining orca whale in captivity taken from the Puget Sound between 1960 and 1976. During that time, more than a third of the whales who frequented the sound were captured. Orca whales are highly social creatures with deep bonds who stay with their families for life. Tokitaya is housed in a 12 to 20 foot deep tank without other orcas, an abysmal experience for a mammal who would normally swim up to 100 miles per day and dive down thousands of feet in the ocean with her family. Lummi tribal leaders have campaigned for over 2 years for Tokitaya's release and are committed to bringing her home to a protected netted cove near the L Pod, where her mother still lives. Lolita still sings the L Pod song. The Miami Seaquarium is owned by Palace Entertainment and is located in Biscayne Bay near downtown Miami. They claim Lolita would die upon release, but the Lummi tribe's vision is to get her safely back where she can hear the voices of her relatives. Tribal carvers have made a totem pole in Lolita's honor, created from a single cedar log. It was trailered and brought to the Miami Seaquarium to protest her captivity and has since been taken to various cities en route back to the Pacific Northwest, making stops along the way to educate the public. Many local people have strong memories of the capture era, and possibly so do the whales, who have rarely been seen in that area since that capture era of the 1960s and 70s. In 1970, when Miami Seaquarium completed the Killer Whale and Dolphin Stadium, Lolita arrived and began her captive training and twice daily performances. Estimated to be 54 years old, Lolita, aka Tokitaya, still performs at the aquarium today. The aquarium's website invites people 365 days a year to enjoy a, quote, fun-filled day of marine life shows, unquote, included in the daily admission of $47.99. Over the years, the Seaquarium makes enough money to pay the county $2.7 million a year, making the operator the largest tenant within the county's Parks, Recreation, and Open Spaces Department, records show. The Miami Seaquarium doesn't want Lolita moved. The Lummi tribe and their allies say they won't give up hope for Tokitaya. I'm Tave Fashe Drake for the KBOO Evening News.
If you are interested in learning more about the Lummi Nation's efforts to move Lolita, visit their website at sacredsea.org.
Say you're the leader of a country whose legislature just declared a climate emergency. What do you do? If you're Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, you approved the expansion of a tar sands pipeline you had the government buy last year. The expansion project would build a second pipeline roughly parallel to an existing one that runs from Alberta's oil sands to a shipping terminal in Burnaby, British Columbia. Will George, a leader of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, whose territory encompasses the tanker terminal, said, quote, "People in British Columbia are the ones risking disaster from spills, and we're prepared to do whatever it takes to stop this pipeline."
Confusion, chaos. KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is ready for anything.
How exhilarating to be alive in this time of rapid changes, of changes in structures and systems we thought were permanent, experiencing the impossible. It's record-breaking time. Never so many people, such warm temperatures, carbon dioxide from eons ago. Another stop on the extinction train coming right up. A timeline where elections are a thin slice of a blink, as if the path of human progress and planetary destruction had to produce something like you-know-who. California got tons of rain this winter and spring, with amazing flowers and plant growth which are now drying up all over the place waiting. We might not see rain here till September. What will the winds blow us this summer, and for how long? My new show, which you don't want to binge, is Earth Trek, to passively go where no one has gone before, without leaving the planet, without leaving a livable planet behind. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Great Old Broads for Wilderness held their Don't Dam Salmon Broadwalk earlier this month. The event was designed to raise awareness about how river health impacts the fate of salmon in the Northwest. Tonight, we're joined by Judy Todd and Mickey Ryan to talk about the event and why it's important. Welcome.
Thank you.
Firstly, whichever one of you wants to take this, talk a little bit about Great Old Broads for Wilderness in general. What do you do?
Well, we're an organization. We've been around 30 years. We're national, and we're grassroots, and we love wilderness, and we want to protect it, and we want to make sure future generations have the opportunities that we have to enjoy it.
And so talk a little bit about your Don't Dam Salmon Boardwalk or Broadwalk. What exactly is that?
Well, this is Judy. That's a good question. A broadwalk is a walk that takes broads, which includes all ages and bros, to a place to really learn what's happening here. So, you know, there's the stuff we read in the paper, and then there's a place that changes in your experience by walking on it, or walking to it, and learning who's there. What are the lands like? What are the people like? What is the habitat like? Who lives there? What's their backstory? And why do we want to look at this particular place? What is the power and the importance of this place on the planet? And we begin by assuming we've got some educating ourselves to do and some people and places to meet. And then we always add an element at a broadwalk, an element of service in. So we connect with people who are there, or maybe a nonprofit or an organization who's already there working, and find out how we can bring a gaggle of broads and contribute to their working activities. So that's a service project portion. It's hugely educational, and out of getting educated and aware, you become an advocate for the things you love. And that simply is our connection to all the work we do.
And I know you had an event earlier this month, so two questions. How often do you do this, and where did you go this time?
We do it as often as we can. Broadwalks happen all over the place. They're regional endeavors, and they're usually started by the men and women who are part of the broad band or chapter in their local area. Like, they know they have this important place. They in this case, it was on the Snake River. And so they come together with collaborators, community members, and all kinds of vested interests. And we join with them, really. And those leaders in that local area are the ones who initiate the broadwalk. And then our national, which Mickey's a member of the board and she can talk to you about that, our national gets behind us and supports and helps to coordinate those efforts. They're paid staff, and the rest of us are volunteers.
So earlier this year, we did one about the border and the effects of the border wall on endangered species. I mean, on humans too, but also we all went to the, you know, Arizona border and looked at the wall and talked to the people there. So we try to do it two or three times a year. We're going down to look at Jordan Cove in August. We try to get to the place and really study it before we decide what we're going to do.
And well, Judy, you mentioned the Snake River. Can you tell us a little more about why that's so important to salmon health?
Yeah, it's a pretty long and involved story. It's been going on for over 40 years. But it's important because over the last 20 years in particular, if you look at the current good science that's accurately collecting passage information, what we're finding is that we're hitting a really desperate time in the lives of all kinds of salmon species coming out of the Snake, because there are four dams on the lower Snake River that are absolutely impeding the progress, not only of smolt, the young salmons going out to the ocean, but of fish being able to get back into their spawning territories. And of course, those are, it's a 1,400 mile swim at least for the fish. They're going down to the ocean, they're coming back to the river. So these four dams in particular, because of the quality of the fish stock traditionally and for the eons in the Snake, have become really keystone species, marking territory for everything else that's there, from the forests, from the quality of the ecosystem, which, by the way, north or inland from the Snake River is pristine. It's part of Frank Church and a couple of other wildernesses. So that ecosystem is intact, but what's not happening as the smolts leave their home river is they're not able to get down and back. The numbers are diminishing. Farm fish aren't helping that. In fact, they're exacerbating the problem in a number of ways. So it was real important for us to go and actually see the dams. What are these? Is it like blowing up the Condit Dam on the Elwha? No. These are dams that were built with the idea in mind that they were a temporary structure. There's a breaching earthen part of each of the four dams. So literally, there's no big blowing up infrastructure. There's a necessity for cutting a channel through earth to allow runs to repropagate and begin to return to a healthy environment, traveling down and back all the way to the ocean if that's where they're headed.
So that's what you'd like to see happen with those dams?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. And could you talk a little bit about some of the learning that happens, say, at this event or at any event in general? What do you see happening? You talked at the beginning about people really kind of getting hands-on and that being more meaningful.
Well, we were able to tour the dam, one of the dams, and see, I mean, we saw it all. We saw how they're trying to help the fish and saw where the $16 billion that has been spent to save these fish has been spent. And it's, you know, it's frightening, the money we've spent and still not succeeded. We met with tribal members. We went to the tribal museum to learn, because obviously this is affecting their entire lifestyle, their culture, destroying that. We had people from the Forest Service come talk to us, Friends of the Clearwater, which is the giant, beautiful, unspoiled area that just needs its fish back, and then it would be more pristine than pristine, I guess. So those are the kind of learning things that we do at each of these and try to, you know, come to our own conclusion independently.
And what are some of the obstacles that you've been seeing in your work trying to do this?
Well, on the Snake in particular, part of it is simply what's already in place. It's called status quo. And so the history of BPA, Bonneville Power Administration, the history of the Army Corps of Engineers, is you make it, we'll protect it, we'll keep it, and we'll have the taxpayers pay for it. And that's been going on for a very long time. And to change that game in a 21st century world means rethinking everything. It means reinvesting in other kinds of infrastructure that are eco-friendly, that are animal and fish and habitat-friendly. That's not their charge. So I think one of the biggest obstacles is simply habits over time, and the habits of mind in particular, and what we've gotten used to from large agencies where we as taxpayers pay money in, but we don't actually understand what it's paying for, how it's paying for it, and how efficient is that. So those are some of the kinds of questions we're really poking at with this effort to educate ourselves and advocate for a change.
Well, we've covered some of the issues facing the Salish Sea orcas. So zoom out a bit and talk about what does salmon have to do with orcas and how is this all connected?
Well, what we learned for the first time was in the winter, they come to the mouth of the Columbia. And that is where they store up all their salmon eating habits and get strong so they can survive the winter, and there's no salmon there for them to eat. So that's why their numbers are dwindling. They're not being able to reproduce. They're getting this thing, which I'd never heard of, called peanut head, which is that they're so thin that they start to look, instead of a nice oval, they have like, they look like a peanut. And you can, you know, we saw photos of this in a new movie that's out, Dam to Extinction, which is fabulous. It explains all of this stuff. And you can see they show the same orca in a few years, and it's just lost all this weight. So that means the whole species is going to go down if we don't do something.
So what do you hope to see your organization doing in the future? What are some of your goals that you hope to achieve?
Well, on this issue, we want the dams breached. And, I mean, the great thing about us is we don't, you know, we're retired. And it's wonderful because we're retired people that worked at the Forest Service. And we have all this expertise, and these people who really have 40 years of working experience, and they've got nothing to lose. You know, it's just like they can go out there and they don't have an agenda. They don't have to worry about losing their job. They, you know, so we're adamant, you know, and I'm not sure anybody else is, but we are, and that's what we want in this area. We must stop Jordan Cove pipeline. I mean, there's lots of things we want to do.
And some of us aren't even retired, because we also have young women and men who also join us. Mm-hmm. But what I'd say we have in common is we believe that knowledge is power, and we're interested in showing that power in ways that supports life on the planet, that supports a healthy ecology. And, you know, we're devoted to what's already here in the West. We don't want to lose it. We want to enhance it.
And we have just a little more than a minute left, and this is kind of a big question, but you guys have mentioned Jordan Cove a couple times, so can you give listeners the 20-second synopsis of what that is and why it's important to know about?
So there's a liquefied natural gas pipeline that is being built from Colorado, well, part of it's been built already, but through southern Oregon. It's going to go under the Pacific Crest Trail, under the Rogue River, all of these things, and then there's going to be a terminal in Coos Bay, in the bay, to take this gas, this wherever it's going to go. And of course, there's all kinds of environmental concerns about a pipeline, and so it's going through the process. Get on the
FERC,
LNG export.org, and write to FERC and get this stopped. We've got till July 5th, but it's going through a licensing process, and there's tons of people in southern Oregon, Rogue Climate, no LNG exports. They're trying to stop this because it could be just an environmental disaster, especially because it's in an earthquake zone.
Well, thank you, Judy and Mickey, for being here with us and talking to us. That was Judy Todd and Mickey Ryan of Great Old Broads for Wilderness. Find out more about them online at www.greatoldbroads.org.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kenzie Beard, Yasmin Kobanoglu, Jason Shermans, Tave Fache-Drake, Alex Connor, Lindsley Rollins, and Ron Bede. The producer is Lisa Loving, and our engineer is Tammy Hebteas. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow, coming up Thursday morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Voices from the Edge with guest host Rochelle Dixon. At 9, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Pear asks, where is our next war coming from, the White House or the Pentagon? At 10, it's The Heather McCoy Show, and at 11, it's Between the Covers. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member, go to KBOO.fm or use our mobile app and click Donate.
Yo, 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 what up, what up, what up, what up? This is Mike Crenshaw. Once again, you are tuned into News from the Boo, a biweekly news segment hosted by myself. And I always have different guests, news from in and around the KBOO community. Tonight I have my comrade, partner in crime, fellow artist, Micah Fletcher. What's up, Micah?
What's up?
I'm good, brother. We're excited. We're going to talk to you about some music. We're going to share some music because, you know, the art that we create kind of bridges the gap between a few different layers of consciousness. Not in the least is social justice consciousness. A history of anti-racist activity on an organized level. So, Micah, man, tell me a little bit about your involvement with this project, which, by the way, is called Last of a Dying Breed.
Right. So we just got done releasing an album on the brink of distinction. It's on Spotify. It's on iTunes. It's on all the major platforms. This project kind of came out of a combination of different scenarios. Me getting stabbed, me writing a lot about it, you being an artist for 30 plus years, me looking up to you, me finally summoning the audacity to ask you to be involved in a project.
Okay.
And like over time,